Hello, everybody. I hope there's still enough oxygen in the room for you to focus on this next talk. I will be talking about the GIL, or the Global Interpreter Lock, and its effect on API performance. We'll be talking about the past, the present, and the free-threaded future of Python. My name is Ruben Hias. I'm a software engineer at TechWolf, which is a skills intelligence scale-up based in Ghent. And I also have a little side project, flow.dev. A quick refresher, since it's quite crucial to the next, to the following of this talk, threads versus processes. A lot of you might already know everything about it. But a process is an independent program with its own memory space, which has isolated memory, which is safer, but also incurs higher overhead, and they can communicate with each other over IPC. Next to that, we have threads, which is a lightweight execution unit contained within these processes. They have the same shared memory space of the process, which is efficient, but can lead to some issues regarding data consistency and race conditions. And they can directly communicate via this shared data. A process can even can either have one thread or multiple threads. So now let's get into it. The GIL, what is it really? Well, the name speaks for itself. It's a lock that allows only one thread to execute Python bytecode at a time. It's a lock that gives the interpreter to a thread of the global process. Many see it as a core thing in Python where everyone needs to work around, but it's not actually a feature of Python. It's not, the Python language can work without it. It's an implementation detail of CPython. Other forks of Python don't necessarily have this. And it is there to protect its internal data structures and very specifically around the garbage collection and reference counting. Here we see, for example, a world where we didn't have something like the global interpreter lock. Here you might have two threads wanting to access the same variable. They both read the current reference count, let's say four, let's say three in this case. They both increment it, they both say it's four and write it. Now, in our state, the reference count is four, but in reality it should be five, and this can obviously lead to many issues. Now, with the GIL, we don't have this since only one thread can execute at the same time, and this will have to finish writing it before it can give its access to the next one. And here we end up with the correct solution. I even went back in time to find the very commit where the global interpreter lock was introduced. I might not have been born, but Guido van Rossum was already writing Python in the good day of August 4th, 1992. I even went to find the specific code. It might be slightly too small. But it's actually very simple. It's you launch a thread, you check, do you have the lock or not? Either you execute or you don't. So you might ask yourself, why do we even have the threads then? If only one can execute at the same time, we might as well just live in a single-threaded world. Well, the global interpreter lock is the default, but applications, or like the CPython implementation, can still choose to release this lock in specific cases. One of these is I/O, or input-output, like network, file reads, etc. Especially back in the day, we see like hard drives were a way different clause. It was still only spinning disks, so we had a read speed 0.5, maybe 2 megabytes a second, network latency of hundreds of milliseconds, and bandwidth of 14.4 kilobytes per second. So this is a really significant chunk of your application execution time, and still today. So if you can have other threads executing during this time, you still get a big speed up. Secondly is the hardware limits. Like multi-threading wasn't necessarily a thing because this compact desk Pro at the time, one of the pretty top of the line machines, only had one thread, like one core. Multi-core machines were only introduced way later and at least common. They were in some high performance context. And finally, one of the things that makes Python what it is today is its extensive ecosystem. And having the global interpreter lock makes it way easier to write these C extensions like, for example, a NumPy that so many of us rely on today. So maybe we wouldn't have had this, should this not have been the case. Now, here, you see all of these numbers. I'll already tell you, it's years. Does anybody have a guess what this might signify? That's very true. These were all attempts to remove the GIL. Even then I was lying. In 2015, there were two attempts. So it's not new that people want to get rid of this and really have the full performance of the computer through its availability. And if you were, if you saw correctly, like, it was only introduced in 1992. It's 1996, and they're already attempting to remove this. But why were so many attempts, did so many attempts fail? Why wasn't GIL removed such a long time ago? Well, the initial attempt in 1996, they did this by having fine-grained locks. So instead of one big lock, every data object had its own lock. And by doing this, it did work. You could have multiple threads executing at the same time, but the single-threaded performance was about 3 times worse. So this was really not a sensible trade-off to make in the majority of the applications. The same happened in 2007, 2015. They tried other things like atomic operations, etc. But finally, the year is 2021, and it's beautiful. What happened here? A new fork of CPython was introduced, the NoGIL fork, by Sam Gross, which was a software engineer at Microsoft at the time. And he introduced the concept of biased reference counting. Biased reference counting is quite simple if you think about it, and it uses the property that while every thread can theoretically access every object, realistically, a lot of the variables will be only accessed by one thread. So there is quite a lot of locality regarding the thread. And he abused this to say, okay, this variable is owned by this thread, and it can access it very quickly. And if other threads want to access it, they can, but that will incur a performance penalty. He also introduced many other things like immortal objects, thread-safe memory allocator, also developed by Microsoft, MimaLock, and many other small tweaks, but this was really the core innovation and allowed it to be only have minimal overhead, I think 10 or 30% of the current implementation. And here is also, after this, it got officially accepted as a Python enhancement proposal. And here it was, I think, set in stone that should something be made with less than 10% overhead over the current single-threaded implementation, or yeah, with the GIL, then it would become mainstream Python. So how we got here, the GIL, it's not a feature. It's a CPython implementation detail to protect these data structures. Many attempts failed. Mainly due to performance penalties, and Python 3.13 finally introduced free threading in an experimental mode, mainly through the innovations of Sam Gross. And you always will have to make a trade-off. You will have small single-threaded slowdown in order to enable this true parallelism. Now the question may be, how do we actually use this? Quite simple, you add a T after your Python version. This is a new standard. If you add a T since 3.14, you automatically get the free threaded version, and UV also has built-in support for this. But realistically, let's say, what does this do to your actual applications? Here you can see, I think, about the most basic version of a multi-threaded program. You just do work, some basic CPU calculations over a set of threads. Here in the normal non-free threaded version, so with a global interpreter lock enabled, we see an execution time of about 2.3 seconds. And now in the free threaded version, we see that it goes down to 770 milliseconds, which is about a 3x speedup. By the way, all the benchmarks here are executed on this MacBook M3 for reference. Okay, let's now look at the single-threaded performance, because we see, okay, there is real significant speed-up possible with this new free-threaded mode, but what is the penalty we pay? Because that's the reason it was not implemented for so long. Well, in the normal version, we see that it's about 2.34 seconds, and then in the free-threaded version, 2.37, which is really only a 1.2% overhead in this case. Note that this will, of course, also highly depend on your actual use case. I've seen some people have seen around up to a 10% increase, but it has really come down a lot. And that's also what this graph indicates. This was a benchmark run by Miguel Grinberg. And here he looked across Python versions about how did the performance change. And what I want to highlight here is the difference in performance penalty between the standard version and the free-threaded version between 3.13 and 3.14. For example, in the whole left bar with Linux 3.13, we see it's maybe 4 seconds of additional time spent. But in 3.14, it's minimal, not even a second. So this really shows the hard work the CPython developers have been doing to make this a reality. So what does it mean for CPU-bound applications? It is now possible to have actual true CPU parallelism with about a 3x speedup I found on some machines, but of course, the more cores you have, the higher the possibility for parallelism is. It's also best for embarrassingly parallel workloads, as you often call it, so fully independent calculations, but this is not new to Python. This has been the case for all multi-threaded applications. Single-threaded overhead is now minimal for a lot of applications. Once again, please test it out with your own workload before you push something to production and everything starts breaking down. Thread overhead matters. Like we can see, I didn't explicitly highlight this, but between the multi and the single-threaded version, it did the same things, but there was a performance penalty to be paid. Now, for the API developers. This was something I was personally very interested in, and I think many of us, some might do of the real scientific calculations, but even they, like a lot of scientific calculations, is now done in NumPy. But you often hear, okay, why are we even investing so much effort into removing this global interpreter lock if it doesn't necessarily affect us that much? Like, oh, it's all applications are I/O bound anyways. Like, CPU, it's only like for academic reasons that we might want to remove this. So that's when I got curious. In current day and age, Python APIs scale by handling concurrent requests, of course, with something like a JUnicorn. So they require parallel execution. They can do their I/O, etc. But at some point, the GIL will block their thread-based parallelism if they really get to the CPU-bound work. So the current solution today is spawn multiple worker processes. So these fully independent processes, not threads, which operate fully independently of each other, own memory space, and all of that. But processes have their trade-offs. As we said, it's a way more heavyweight thing than a thread. So for one, processes don't share memory space. Let's say you have your multiple worker processes, you initialize your API, it's about 500 megabytes, you have to load in some data to be able to serve things. Once you go up your processes, you can see your memory requirements go through the roof and your cloud bill will go as well. Next to that, data sharing is quite hard. Let's say if you can just have a local dict, which is your cache or something, you can easily do that with threads. With processes, way harder, requires serialization, IPC, etc., as well as just being slower in general. But, and one big but, it doesn't have this global interpreter lock contention. So does that make it worth it or not? And this is